Today, children everywhere are making preparations for an event of world-shaking significance, the annual visit of Santa Claus. Informed sources report legions of junior citizens are making monumental efforts not to cry and not to pout.
And that goes for undocumented people as well.
I was thinking the cast members of The View.
Monumental efforts, people.
Not to cry. Oh, welcome everybody to the Wednesday, December 11th edition of the radio program, A Record of the John Carlson Show. Heard this and every single day of the work week. 570 KVI, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Man, we've got a lot of crazy stuff going on. And, I mean, some of it's local and some of it's statewide and some of it is national. Did you guys hear about the woman who tried to kidnap another woman's child out of a hospital waiting room?
The emergency room.
I heard of the kidnapping. ER. I never heard exactly what was the target or the person.
And it's on tape.
That's like a TV movie, I remember.
It's on tape. It's not, I mean, I thought this would be getting a whole lot more attention than it's getting so far. It's getting some attention, but for crying out loud, talk about your nightmare scenarios. A 45-year-old woman charged after police said she attempted to kidnap a 3-year-old toddler from an emergency room waiting room at Good Samaritan Hospital in Puyallup. Sherry Atkins faces charges of second-degree kidnapping for trying to take the child from her mother. She also is facing a second-degree assault charges for injuring the child while trying to take her. By the way, second-degree assault is a strike. Ms. Atkins did not appear in court yesterday. But a judge has ordered, no surprise here, a mental health evaluation. She is being held no bail. Como News reports that Ms. Atkins has a history of mental health and substance abuse issues. She has multiple prior misdemeanors and felonies on her record. 1 year ago, December 2023, she terrorized her neighbors in the Frederickson area in Pierce County.
Yeah, out past Puyallup, kind of beyond South Hill towards Spanaway.
She was walking around breaking windows with an axe and pointing what appeared to be a gun at multiple people. Again, the attempt to snatch this child is on video. If you go to Como News, they've got it there. Hospital staff called Puyallup police. This is Monday. After Miss Atkins, the 45-year-old woman with a troubled history, we'll say, picked up the child and tried to walk out with the 3-year-old girl out of the hospital. After a struggle with multiple people, I guess we can call them Good Samaritans at the Good Samaritan Hospital waiting room. After a struggle with multiple people trying to break the child out of her grip, hospital security arrived and detained her for officers. The child's mother, according to police reports, told police that she was sitting in the waiting room with her friend and her 3-year-old daughter by her side when Miss Atkins sat across from her and started making faces at the little girl. Moments later, Miss Atkins picked the girl up, grabbed her purse, and started walking toward the exit with the child, quote, wrapped tightly in her arms.
And mom's sitting right there.
Yeah, no, this isn't, you know, mom was using the restroom, mom was chatting with a friend on a smartphone, you know, 20 feet away. No, mom was sitting right there. The child's mother and her friend ran over to stop Atkins as she was fleeing and started screaming for help. Multiple witnesses able to pry the child from Atkins' grip. The child sustained minor injuries and redness on her stomach and back from the incident. This is all documented by police. When an officer asked how the child felt about this ordeal, the three-year-old, quote, explained scared and began to tear up. And the child told her mother, "I don't want to go with her," referring to Ms. Atkins. Quote, "This lady is not safe. She has a history. She has a record," said Danny Dean to police. Dean and her family had prior contact with Atkins in the December 2023 incident where Atkins was acting erratically and breaking windows in the Frederickson neighborhood. She was arrested in that case for malicious mischief. So,
any word why Miss Atkins was at the Good Samaritan Hospital in Puyallup in the seat waiting? Any appointment?
No.
Or they haven't said anything?
No. Okay. She may have just been going there to wait and see what set her off.
I've
she may
seen
have
a lot
seen
of
the little girl
yeah.
Getting out of the car and decided to follow her in.
Yeah, but how many times have I been to a hospital and you got security and I've even been asked, "Sir, do you have an appointment or anything you need? You've been here a while."
Well, the thing about ER waiting rooms is that they are usually just inside the doors. Not that far away from the doors.
And they tend to be a high traffic area. I mean, lots of people going in and out.
And usually you walk up to the desk and explain what you're doing there, and then you take a seat. And my guess is that Miss Atkins just walked in and took a seat. So anyway, there you go. Little crazy stuff happening. And boy, you can bet that's a mom who's going to be holding her kid tight.
And you question again, John, here's somebody apparently that has a track record, and why aren't they getting help and somewhere where they should be safe?
In a sane world,
yeah.
This woman would be, Sherry Atkins, would be in a mental institution already, okay? She has mental health problems that are addled by drug use. She has a criminal history, which shows what happens when her mental health has, shall we say, an outburst. And so that, to me, is grounds for institutionalizing this woman. She has mental health issues. Those issues are not going away, and they manifest themselves in doing harm to other people. So, anyway, good work, all you Good Samaritans at Good Samaritan Hospital who rushed in to help this mom keep her child. Good work on the mom's part, screaming that this woman was trying to take her child. And great work, Puyallup PD.
Cool to be a cop again, we're finding out in many areas.
I like how you just put that. It's cool to be a cop again. Yes. At least it's getting that way. And you know what else? It's cool to be listening to the John Carlson Show when we have Legendary Lyric Wednesday. You know how our almost world-famous contest works, don't you? Yes, I read you the lyric from a classic song, a hit song, and you try and guess what that lyric is or what song that lyric is from. And then when we play that lyric going in or coming back from commercial break, Be caller number 10, 206-421-5757. It's 206-421-5757. And when you are caller number 10, identify either the song or the artist, and we'll have some nice goodies coming your way. I think this week it's a $50 gift card to Daniel's Broiler Restaurant.
Yeah, Daniel's Broiler here, always a hit. And let me say, family restaurant here during the holiday time. It's a perfect place to take. The kids will find a lot of fun things on the menu here to enjoy. By the way, for the adults, the Daniel's Mixer selection, it's going quick. I'm not sure you can use the $50 gift card for that, but just one of many things. Four locations for you. Have a look. Have a menu. Look here. And just remember, big parties. In fact, you can grab a whole restaurant for even weddings and other occasions. Okay. Danielsbroiler.com.
All right. Again, four great locations. I've been to them all. It's one of the best premier steakhouses in the Pacific Northwest. Okay, here is your lyric. Faithful friends who are dear to us will be near to us once more. One more time. Faithful friends who are dear to us will be near to us once more. Where have you heard that song? I'm going to give you one hint. It has been a hit many times over the years. It has been a hit many times over the years by solo artists and by groups. That's as much as I'm going to tell you. The rest you'll have to find out through diligent research on your own, namely your own sense of recall. Where have you heard that song, that lyric before? Faithful friends who are dear to us will be near to us once more. All right, it is 15 minutes after 6 o'clock. Like I said, we have a lot of stuff coming your way. We got that manifesto from Luigi Mangione. Luigi Mangione is the 26-year-old man who police say is responsible for the ambush assassination murder of health insurance executive Brian Thompson, United Healthcare CEO. He is now, of course, as you know, under lock and key in Pennsylvania. His lawyer is fighting extradition. We'll let you listen to the case he makes for granting his client extradition. We also have a member of Congress attacked at the Capitol, reportedly because of her position supporting a ban on men who identify as women, i.e. trans women, using the women's restrooms on Capitol Hill. Congresswoman Nancy Mace, no stranger to controversy or publicity, she said that she was attacked and was injured. We'll have details. And speaking of trans, a huge issue. The state authority responsible for delineating standards in scholastic athletic competition is considering a policy to prevent boys who identify as girls from competing in girls' sports. Right now, and this has been the source of great controversy, all a boy has to do is say that he identifies as a girl. No kind of medical clearance, nothing involving a physician. All he has to do is say, I consider myself female. And he can play girls' sports. Last year, we had a boy identified as a girl win the state girls championship in a track and field event. And this is one reason why this controversy is heating up. Another reason this controversy is heating up is Thank goodness, girls and their parents are finally pushing back on this ridiculous phenomenon of boys playing in girls' sports. It took a few years, didn't it? It took a while, but now basically people are no longer intimidated. They're no longer afraid of the name calling. They're no longer afraid of the harassment campaign that comes from the trans community. They are pushing back, and they are making some progress here. We'll give you details on that coming up on The Commute with Carlson. There is only one place in Washington state where voters, post-election, where voters believe that Washington state is on the right track rather than the wrong track. We'll tell you where that place is. That's just part of what we have on The Commute with Carlson. Once again, juveniles in a stolen car attempt to steal dozens and dozens of firearms. We'll tell you where and whether they got away with it. As The Commute with Carlson continues, Talk Radio 570 KVI. By the way, if you're crossing the Tacoma Narrows Bridge this weekend, do be careful. Take a listen from Northwest News Radio.
A damaged expansion joint in the westbound lanes needs fixing. The aging bridge, built in 1950, needs frequent maintenance like this thanks to its age and heavy traffic. From 8 a.m. Saturday until 9 p.m. Sunday, two right lanes approaching the bridge and the Jackson Avenue on-ramp will be closed. The HOV lane will be open to all drivers during this time. WSDOT says you should expect delays and plan for extra travel time and asks you to please slow down when approaching the work zone. Tim Hole, Northwest News Radio.
Okay, that is the old Narrows Bridge, which, of course, was built to replace Galloping Gertie when it collapsed and fell apart.
So that's one going westbound.
That's if you're heading from Tacoma westbound. That's right. On your way to Gig Harbor, Shelton, want to hang out with Mark Christopher.
That's my backup ride.
That's how you get there. All right. 20 minutes after 6, Philip J. Vandervoort III around the corner with this morning's first social media sweep, the John Carlson Show, live and underway. Good morning. That's 26 minutes now after 6 o'clock in the morning. Little side note to this song. This is, of course, Bing Crosby performing Little Drummer Boy with, at that time, huge pop star David Bowie.
Wasn't that a special to watch, too? Breaking the Barrier. Wow.
And that was it. That was in the 70s, a very divisive time, and they both came together and sang the song for a Christmas special.
You bet. Different generations.
And it became a huge hit. Yeah, different generations, just a whole different audience. Bing Crosby, the crooner, and Ziggy Stardust. So, it's a beautiful version of the song as well. All right, Philip J. Vandervoort III, let's talk about what's going on in the social media world.
Yeah, I want to start with a story that made a whole lot of headlines and then just kind of get an understanding of where this puts the rest of America when it comes to these sorts of accusations and legal cases. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. For the last couple of days, every news outlet has been reporting about the iconic rapper Jay-Z and allegations that Jay-Z raped a girl when she was 13. And the Hollywood Reporter posted a story yesterday that says now a lawyer for Jay-Z is arguing in court documents that the woman who on Sunday accused the rapper of raping her when she was 13 must reveal her identity or drop the lawsuit altogether. So that's kind of the counter lawsuit from Jay-Z, who kind of stands as the accused or the alleged right now.
You know what? And that is fair. That is fair because we're not talking about a crime being investigated by police. We're talking about a civil lawsuit being brought years after the alleged incident took place. He said versus she said. This is the kind of accusation that can ruin a reputation and sink a career. Right? Let's have the woman step forward and identify herself so that her version and her character can be vetted just like Jay-Z's is.
Would be, yes. And the reason I wanted to bring all this up, because I want to know where are all the Believe Women supporters to declare Jay-Z's imminent guilt, the way we've seen this come down with the Pete Hegseth accuser.
Right.
I shouldn't even say the Pete Hegseth accuser, but the critics of Pete Hegseth, or to go back to the Brett Kavanaugh Supreme Court nomination confirmation in the Senate. So I'm just kind of curious, where are all those Believe Women supporters? Because they were very vocal during the Brett Kavanaugh stuff. And then for some reason, they never show up when it's a celebrity that they might like Jay-Z.
Well, they have to ask a very important question first.
Yeah.
How did the accused vote in the last election?
Right.
Then they'll know how outrageous Then they'll know whether the woman deserves to be believed or not.
Yeah, we've been talking for the last day or so about how the public is reacting to the arrest of 26-year-old Luigi Mangione, going to be accused, yet to be charged, with the murder of the United Healthcare CEO in New York, the assassination of that CEO. And somebody posted this, so I kind of want to ask you and Mark, is this anything or is this nothing? And this person posted on X, we have Luigi Mangione's life story in roughly 3 hours after his arrest, but we still have zero information about Trump's attempted assassin, and that was back in July. Or was that, that was July, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, middle of July. Is that anything? Is that something?
No.
Is that nothing?
It's not much of a mystery. It was a local kid. I'm talking about, and his name escapes me, from Butler, Pennsylvania.
From
that vicinity, who was kind of a ne'er-do-well. And, I think lived at home, went to local schools, and
I guess one of the other...
We never got a motive. They searched exhaustively his social media background.
Yeah, one of the
to
other
see if there was a manifesto
differences here is that Luigi Mangione is alive and the attempted assassin of Trump was shot and killed that day.
Right.
And that also limits any discussion of motivation, background, things like that as well.
And when they didn't appear to find evidence, to find evidence of anyone else involved.
Based on, Butler, Pennsylvania County Fairgrounds.
And what a larger motive may have been, and, his mental health history, they essentially said, okay, these trails don't lead anywhere. And they lost interest in going.
We took off
further.
The shooter, you can't get any more information. Mm-hmm. They got what they could. Yeah.
If he was in police custody, I'm sure we would have known a whole lot more. But once they established that he did not appear to be working with anyone else and he was dead, the incentive to follow through has evaporated. All right, you got 31 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning. I told you some of what we have in front of us here on the commute with Carlson. It's a very busy morning.
So it's kind of a weird one, John and Phil. Minutes ago, you talked about cool to be a cop with the Good Samaritan Hospital, the child kidnapping, people stepping up, helping the mom, Puyallup Police, way to go. You had Mayor Farrell yesterday there, Federal Way, saying cops are allowed to make arrests. 402% increase in drug arrests. Just learning the last original member of Mod Squad, a TV show that made fighting crime cool, has passed away. It looks like Michael Cole, who played Pete Cochran, passed away yesterday at the age of 84.
84?
No cause of death.
Well, 84.
84. Well, people are kind of wondering because we lost Peggy Lipton, Julie. She was 72. She passed away in 2019.
Formerly Mrs. Quincy Jones.
Right. Colon cancer was the cause of death. Clarence Williams III, who played Lincoln Hayes, he passed away in 2021. Colon cancer. Michael Cole passed away. Cause of death not giving. People are hoping it's not a third.
Mm.
Colonoscopy. Just keep it in mind maybe for the new year, everybody. But there you go.
It is 22 minutes to 7 o'clock. All right. Yesterday, we brought you the story of Luigi Mangione, a young man who grew up in a world of privilege. His family owns country clubs and resorts in the state of Maryland. Well-known family, politically connected. In fact, his cousin is a Republican legislator in the Maryland House of Delegates, their equivalent of the state legislature. And then yesterday brought you the story of his arrest in Altoona, Pennsylvania at a McDonald's, basically a hash brown, an order of hash brown potatoes did him in. He was recognized at the counter by an employee who alerted authorities. And that's when we learned more about this guy and his background. Handsome, healthy, despite a recurring back injury that occasionally caused him excruciating back pain. Money, intelligence. He has both a undergraduate and master's degree in computer science from the University of Pennsylvania, an Ivy League school. Went to one of the priciest private schools growing up, was valedictorian. So he has all that going for him, and he retreats in this, you know, goes off grid, stops talking to everyone, stops talking to family, stops talking to friends, stops talking to people he used to know, and just goes silent for 6 months. And then reemerges on the streets of New York City at 6:45 in the morning and assassinates a health insurance company executive, Brian Thompson, as he's walking into the New York Hilton to deliver a speech. Shoots him in the back 3 times. So his lawyer says that he should be given bail and that he should not be extradited from Pennsylvania to New York to face charges. Here he is. His name is Thomas Dickey, being interviewed by CNN's Caitlin Collins. Have a listen.
I haven't seen a speck of evidence at all. I argued today at the extradition hearing. I still haven't received details about the charges that he's facing in New York. I heard your introduction and looking into that. But so I, you know, we as lawyers need to make informed decisions, and we need to get our hands and our eyes on some evidence.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the charges right here. It's murder, a loaded firearm, 2 counts of that, a forged instrument, and criminal possession of a weapon as well. I mean, those are the charges from New York. I mean, so you're not, as you're fighting extradition, you're not actually arguing that the authorities in New York have the wrong guy, are you?
Well, I haven't seen any evidence that they have the right guy. I can tell you that much. So I don't know anything about that. You know, there's, you know, identification issues that are present. And so I don't, you know, like I said, this is why I need to look at some things, and they need to convince me. You know, I try to remind people, and it's a shame that we forget about this presumption of innocence that the Constitution gives all Americans. And people don't worry about the Constitution until they're facing charges or accusations against them. Then trust me, the Constitution matters. But,
and of course it does. And yes, I know you highlighted earlier and emphasized innocent until proven guilty. I understand that. But I read the police report from when he was arrested. He initially gave them a false name. And then when they asked to confirm his identity, he said that he shouldn't have lied to them about it. I mean, that would seem to be that they do have the right person, given that he had a gun on him. He had a fake New Jersey ID that he used to check into a hostel. I mean, is none of that enough for you personally to know that they do have the right guy?
Well, first of all, that's a piece of paper. I know you probably can't tell, but I'm 5'6". I could write on that I'm 6'5", and all this other kind of stuff. So that's written on paper. What's nice about the law is we'll have a hearing. I can cross-examine witnesses and find out, look at reports and find out what they have and what they don't have. So, again, that's just written on a criminal complaint. Without getting into the details of that, I don't see any evidence of a forgery. They're going to have to at least prove a prima facie case, which is less than the beyond a reasonable doubt.
Okay. You'll notice he's saying, let's not get into the details, and then says, I haven't seen any evidence. Well, here is a couple of excerpts from the manifesto that they took off of Luigi Mangione at the time he was arrested. Okay, they lifted the gun, they lifted the silencer. He had $8,000 in American money. He had $2,000 in foreign currency. And he had a manifesto. Here is what he wrote in the manifesto. Quote, to save you a lengthy investigation, I state plainly that I wasn't working with anyone. That would seem to me to be evidence. Okay? I wasn't working with anyone. This was fairly trivial. Some elementary social engineering, basic CAD, a lot of patience. My tech is pretty locked down because I work in engineering, so probably not much info there. I do apologize for any strife of traumas, but it had to be done. Frankly, these parasites simply had it coming. The U.S. has the number one most expensive healthcare system in the world, yet we rank roughly 42nd in life expectancy. United Healthcare. United is the largest company in the U.S. by market cap, behind only Apple, Google, and Walmart. It has grown and grown, but has our life expectancy? He goes to say, on to admit the problem is more complex than he is allowing for. Quote, but many have illuminated the corruption and greed. Decades ago, he mentions a couple of authors who've written books. And the problems simply remain. It is not an issue of awareness at this point, but clearly power games at play. Evidently, I am the first to face it with such brutal honesty. So here you have someone who's making it abundantly clear. I'll save you an investigation. I wasn't working with anyone. I was operating alone. And it wasn't very hard. And here is my motive. So the attorney who seems to enjoy being in the spotlight may try and wrap himself in the arms of the Constitution, but no one is saying that we don't need a trial, he's guilty. They're saying that he should be arrested, he has been. He should be held without bail for the time being. He is being held without bail. His attorney thinks he should be have bailed out by now. And that he should be extradited to face charges because there is evidence that he is responsible. That doesn't mean he's convicted. There's evidence that he's responsible for the crime. He should be extradited. And he will be. So that's what we know. That's what's in the manifesto they caught. Basically, like I said, this guy carried with him the evidence that will be needed to convict him in a court of law, including, apparently, the weapon that was used to murder the healthcare executive, Mr. Thompson. All right, you got 48 minutes after 6 o'clock. Checking in real quickly with our good buddy Lars Larson, our Noon to 3 host. The commute continues. Good morning. By golly, that's not our legendary lyric of the day, is it? No. Here is your lyric. When you hear this song going in or coming back from commercial break, be caller number 10. Some nice little Christmas stocking stuff for coming your way. Here we go. Faithful friends who are dear to us will be near to us once more. Faithful friends who are dear to us will be near to us once more. When you hear that lyric going into or coming back from commercial break, again, give us a call, and maybe you'll be our winner. Lars Larson is not winning our contest, but he's a winner generically.
I'm not eligible, but...
Generic, yes.
But there you go.
Good morning. How are you, Lars?
I'm doing very well, John. And what are you thinking about what's going on in the world right now? There seem to be a lot of positive indications, although the White House figured out a new way to steal money and hand it to Ukraine. This obsession by the Biden crime family in Ukraine is really kind of sick.
Well, I mean, you've seen the political cartoon of here's how it works. Aid goes to Ukraine. Ukraine
yep.
aid goes to Hunter Biden. Hunter Biden
yep.
returns to father. Father supports
yep.
more Ukraine aid.
And do you imagine that just like we saw a lot of the payments to the Biden crime family happen after the end of Joe Biden's vice presidency?
Yes.
Why? Because they thought it was easier to conceal. Because while he's vice president, now while he's president, people are paying a lot of attention. Afterward, when we do the story, I don't know, 6 or 8 months from now, that Hunter Biden has just been given a major contract with a major Ukrainian company or Kazakhstan company or Beijing company, they'll say, oh, well, that's just for things he's doing now. No, they're paying off the favors they bought.
You know, there's something,
that's how it works.
Something I've noticed here. You know, the country singer George Strait did a brief version of the Trump dance as he walked
yeah.
out on stage to do his show. Jeff
yeah.
Bezos saying that he's very hopeful about a second Trump term and talks about, you know, getting serious about the national debt. And it seems to me that it is easier now. More and more people are less and less reluctant to admit that they voted for Donald Trump and were happy to do so and have zero apologies for having done so.
And isn't that significant and isn't it fantastic? Because there were people who literally, I think, feared that they'd either lose a job, lose a promotion, lose sales with their customers, or lose relationships with their family.
Yeah, lose friends.
Yeah, they'd lose it. They supported him, but they couldn't say the candidate whose name cannot be said out loud.
Yeah, well, that ain't the case anymore. And
nope.
You're right. It makes for a better country. People feel just fine about saying how they voted in 2024, although some people appear to be a little reticent about admitting they voted for what's her name again?
The signs came down fast.
It's 4 minutes to 7 o'clock. The John Carlson Show, hour number two on the way. Right, Johnny Mathis? The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI, 4 minutes after 7 o'clock. Thank you very much for joining me. Having a great time. And, of course, since it's Wednesday, that means our almost world-famous legendary lyric contest continues every single Wednesday morning on The Commute with Carlson. I read you the lyric of a classic hit song from the past. And when you hear us play that lyric going in or out of commercial break, you be the 10th caller, 206-421-5757. One more time, 206-421-5757. And name the song or the artist and get a little stocking stuffer coming your way from our friends at Daniel's Broiler.
Yeah, Daniel's Broiler, again, a nice, elegant, a nice, fine dining with USDA choice beef, the seafood and the whole bit. Don't forget family restaurant as well. Let's just say the crew can make the adjustment to be workable and entertaining with your kids, no matter what the age. But if you need a serious little night here, like Mr. and Mrs. Carlson, they can make it very, very memorable.
Okay.
Great crew there. All four locations. Have a look. DanielsBroiler.com.
There you have it. Now, here is your lyric. Faithful friends who are dear to us will be near to us once more. One more time. Faithful friends who are dear to us will be near to us once more. Where is that lyric from? When you hear us play it, be caller number 10. One more time, 206-421-5757. Okay. In Olympia, you may have noticed, we're going to have a deficit this year. Jay Inslee has to be the luckiest you-know-what in the political world, because every year that he was governor, from the moment he stepped into office until he left, he had a surplus. At one point, he had a massive surplus, $10 billion. That's billion with a B, billion dollars. He never returned even a penny of it back to taxpayers in the form of tax relief. By the way, 80% of the states in America over the last half dozen years, 80% of the states have issued tax relief of one kind or another. Not Washington State, not Jay Inslee. And here he is now leaving office, and it looks like the deficit clouds are forming overhead. It's going to be dark days ahead for Olympia. You're hearing about a $10 billion surplus, but that's over a four-year period. It's less than that for the, much less than that for the upcoming biennium. So after more than doubling state spending, more than doubling the budget during his time as governor, it's time to finally show some spending restraint, right? Well, we could talk about it, but no, that doesn't appear to be the priority. The priority is finding new taxes. Understand, this is an administration that raised taxes when they were running surpluses. That capital gains tax? They imposed a 7% gain on investment income above $250,000 when they were running a very healthy surplus. That was for ideological reasons. We want the rich to pay more, but you know, they said our tax system isn't fair to working folks and poor folks. So did they impose a capital gains tax and then cut the sales tax, which is a regressive tax? Why, no, they did not. They just imposed the capital gains tax. Now they're talking about other kinds of taxes. There's two that they're looking at. The first is a straight-out backdoor income tax. It would be a payroll tax on incomes above a certain threshold. That is, again, just another way of taxing income. And that appears to be the most popular new tax that they might be trying to impose. Seattle has a variation of such a tax right now. The other is a wealth tax, a tax on your wealth, whether you use it or not. For instance, if you have $10,000 in the bank, I guess you could say, you know, wow, you're doing pretty well. You got $10,000. But again, you're saving the money. You're not spending it. Once you spend it, it will be taxed. But you're just keeping it in the bank. Olympia now wants to start taxing what you're worth, whether you spend it or not. You know who saw the handwriting on the wall here? Jeff Bezos.
Because he moved to Florida, right?
He moved to Florida months before the capital gains tax went into effect. And he has saved over $250 million in taxes he would have owed in the state of Washington for selling stock in Amazon in Florida. So if he had done in Washington state what he is has done several times now in Florida, he would have paid Washington state about over $150 million dollars. $150 million just for living here. Well, that would have been for capital gains expenses. But now they want to say that if you are Bill Gates, if you're Steve and Connie Ballmer, if you're the former Mrs. Jeff Bezos, you can be taxed simply by having that money in the bank or your investment portfolio, whether you spend a dime of it or not. Whether you sell any of that stock in your portfolio or not, you can be taxed just because it's there. You know who flirted with this idea during the campaign was Kamala Harris, talked about it. And one of her supporters, Mark Cuban, who used to own the Dallas Mavericks, and you see him on the TV show Shark Tank all the time, said that it was an economy killer. Yeah, he's right. Here is an example of the wealth tax in action. In Norway, the socialist-inclined legislature there has a tax on what they call unrealized gains. This tax had just been doubled by the government. So if you're a business person who's raised, let's say, $100 million to launch a company, that money is wealth. Now, you're trying to put that money to work, growing and expanding your company. But they will tax the value of those assets, even if they're not sold. So Frederick Haga, who started a small tech company that attracted investors, said, in my case, because the venture capital investments had increased my company's valuation, the so-called wealth tax meant that I faced a tax bill many times larger than my after-tax income. The only way I could pay this tax was to sell shares and dilute my ownership in my company. He said, I had investors, yes, but I didn't have a luxurious lifestyle. I flew economy. I lived in the same two-bedroom apartment in one of Oslo, Norway's cheaper neighborhoods. So eventually, Mr. Haga, who grew up in Norway, left the country. Quote, I said goodbye to my friends and family, and I moved to Switzerland. So have a lot of other people. 100 of Norway's top 400 taxpayers, so one quarter of their wealthiest people, which represent about 50% of the wealth among those 400 people, have left Norway in order to protect the value of their businesses. He says, to socialist politicians in Norway, entrepreneurs are mere piggy banks to be raided for ever more spending. When confronted with the reality that you can't pay taxes with money you don't actually have, the response is a vague moralism like, those with the broadest shoulders must bear the heaviest burdens. Earlier this year, instead of scaling back this tax, the government doubled down. The intent is to, again, punish you not for what you spend or not for what you earn, but simply for what you're worth. He said, for tax the rich ideological reasons, the government leans on the wealth tax, tapping entrepreneurs whether they have made money or not. It's an approach that's completely incompatible with a forward-looking high-tech economy. Other European countries understand this, which is why Austria, Denmark, Germany, the Netherlands, and France have repealed their unrealized gains taxes. In other words, what we call here a wealth tax. Sweden, which is, of course, Norway's neighbor, abolished its wealth tax in 2007. Since then, Sweden's tech sector has flourished. But Norway's has not. In the last 15 years, Norway's gone from having 7 of the 30 most valuable companies among the Nordic countries, what we call Scandinavia, they went from having 7 of the 30 most valuable countries to having 2. One is Equinor, one is DNB. DNB is a bank. Neither one is a tech company. So maybe it would be a good idea if we learned a lesson from a country that's doing it wrong and as a result has fewer tech companies and fewer jobs, rather than once again blindly following socialist ideology and punishing people simply because they are worth a certain amount of money. Not for what they spend, not for the value of their property, but simply for what their net worth happens to be. It is 19 and a half minutes after 7 o'clock, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI, Philip J. Vandervoort III, right around the corner, the social media sweep again, the legendary lyric of the morning. Faithful friends who are dear to us will be near to us once more. When you hear that lyric going in or out of commercial break, give us a call, 206-421-5757, a little stocking stuffer from Daniel's Broiler coming your way. It's 7:20. Good morning. Thank you, Burl Ives, but that is not our legendary lyric.
Oh, that's a singing snowman.
That's Sam, the singing snowman from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Because hopes are 2 weeks from today, we're going to have snow on the ground.
Christmas is 2 weeks from today?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Man.
5% chance we have snow every year, but we have broken that.
Oh, would you drop it? You are trying so...
You guys watch.
You are trying so desperately
to throw my yellow flag in the air. That's a 5-yard penalty for reaching, right?
I will call you both Christmas morning. Are we stuck?
No, it's raining. Like it always does. Anyway, with rare exception. Okay, your legendary lyric, faithful friends who are dear to us will be near to us once more. When you hear that lyric going in or out of commercial break, call 206-421-5757. Little stocking stuffer coming your way from Daniel's Broiler Steakhouses. All right, Philip J., what's going on in the social media?
I got some national, I got some local, and I have a follow-up on something that we talked about last week. The social media sweep, sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman is pushing back on people that are essentially characterizing the arrested suspect Luigi Mangione for killing the United Healthcare CEO in New York as some sort of a hero or someone to be praised. Senator Fetterman posted no shortage of expletive deleted takes on the 2024 election or on this assassination of the CEO in New York. The public execution of an innocent man and father of two is indefensible, not inevitable. Condoning and or cheering this killing in any way says more about you than the situation of health care insurance. So there's John Fetterman.
I tell you, Fetterman keeps going in this direction, and he's going to end up joining the Republican Party.
Yeah,
I mean, he's just making more and more sense.
He's going to figure out who amongst the Democrats, you know, will stand with him and agree with him. Richie Torres, the congressman in New York, might be the only one.
Well, no, I'll tell you something, Mr. Fetterman. These people doing what you are condemning, they're all on your side. Are you sure that's the side you want to stay on?
Yeah, long term. Long term. Here in Seattle, Andrea Suarez ran for state legislature, did not win in a district within the city of Seattle for the Olympia legislature, but she's still the executive director of We Heart Seattle.
Wonderful organization.
Yeah, she's putting out a proposal to Brandy Cruz, the host of the Undivided podcast, and then Erica Barnett, who's been a longtime Seattle political news writer, kind of a city hall watchdog. And Andrea Suarez is asking Erica Barnett and Brandy Cruz, would you be willing to co-host and moderate a panel discussion in a crossfire type debate format where experts from both sides of the housing first versus the treatment first homelessness response debate these issues? I'd like to promote a healthy debate with local panel experts from various perspectives. I'll pay each of you to co-moderate the public debate in Seattle in a town hall style. Erica can pick experts and Brandy can pick experts and moderate it accordingly. That could be a worthwhile conversation,
right? We play excerpts from that debate. That sounds interesting. Good for her.
Yeah. So,
I
think that this is kind of the put up or shut up moment as well for this Housing First group, you know, the homeless industrial complex that are demanding, you know, just saying, well, you know, Housing First, no questions asked. No accountability required for people that receive Housing First, things like that.
Well, bottom line, though, is you've heard me say the left, the political left, not Democrats, not standard issue liberals, but the political left, the progressives who are calling the shots in King County and Olympia, they don't like debating.
Oh, no.
They don't do so well in debates because they don't care about facts and evidence. They care about ideology.
Right. Expose them with sunlight, right?
Right.
Okay, here's my follow-up. Last week I was talking about a Tacoma City councilman. It was reported by Como 4 that basically said he didn't like the possibility of Trump putting tariffs on Canadian products imported into the U.S.
Councilmember Joe Bushnell says tariffs add another layer of uncertainty.
Well, a lot of our lumber actually comes from Canada, like 85% of it. And if there's like a 100% increase in the cost of lumber, like how is that going to look for our facilities?
Canadian lumber is needed for construction projects all around the city, and tariffs could further impact the price of groceries or the cost of gas.
So I heard that about the Tacoma City Councilman, Joe Bushnell. I reached out to the councilman and said, hey, if you're concerned about the cost of things going up in the state of Washington, were you concerned about the price of gasoline with the Jay Inslee Climate Commitment Act and all this? I reached out for a comment, and I received a follow-up that said, thank you for the invitation for comment from Councilmember Bushnell. He is not available to comment. No. So, what like we were just talking
what
about.
What a rousing
surprise,
defense.
Surprise.
What a rousing defense of his point of view.
When pressed, progressives don't want to talk about their policy stances because they don't seem to have a leg to stand on, or they'll expose their hypocrisy that they're against tariffs on Canadian goods while simultaneously being in favor of Jay Inslee's high energy and gas prices that drive up the cost for everything you buy in a store like groceries or lumber if you want to build something.
And when we come back on the John Carlson Show, stunning development in Washington State. Boys can compete against girls in girls' sports if the boy says he identifies as a female. In other words, if he's a trans girl. That may be about to change. Dramatic announcement that I will share with you coming up on The Commute with Carlson. It is 7:31. Good morning. 23 minutes to 8 o'clock. Yes, we've got a winner. Didn't take long. Matt, KVI listener Matt from Shelton. That's otherwise known. You can see from the huge signs as you're entering the city, home of Mark Christopher, radio legend.
I can meet him right at the decorated train there on railroad and say, here you go, bro. Here's a gift
card.
Here's
a gift card. Anyway, Matt in Shelton, who works for the State Department of Transportation, but one of the good guys, is our winner. He recognized that lyric from Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. Now, here's what you need to know about this song. It's actually a very interesting story. It was written for the MGM musical Meet Me in St. Louis and was sung by Judy Garland. In 1957, Frank Sinatra recorded a version with modified lyrics. We'll tell you why in a bit. In 2007, it was ranked as the third most performed Christmas song during the previous 5 years. So in the scene where this song was sung, again, it was a musical, Meet Me in St. Louis, Judy Garland's character sings the song to cheer up her despondent 5-year-old sister because of the father's plans to move to New York City for a job promotion. Anyway, what's interesting is that the original version of the song was panned and rejected because of the lyrics. Judy Garland and the director, Vincent Minnelli, said the song is too much of a downer. They asked the writer of the song, Hugh Martin, to change the lyrics. For example, the lines, "It may be your last. Next year we may all be living in the past," became, "Let your heart be light. Next year, all our troubles will be out of sight."
That is much more optimistic, I must say.
Judy Garland's version of the song became a huge hit during the Second World War. And she would perform it in front of troops, many of whom would be brought to tears. When Frank Sinatra decided to do the song, he approached Hugh Martin and said, hey, can you revise the lyrics again and maybe make it even more upbeat? They took out the line, until then we'll have to muddle through somehow, and replaced it with, hang a shining star upon the highest bough. So in other words, it was a melancholy song,
sure,
initially.
Sounds like the transition from the Biden years back to the Trump years.
And
nice observation. I'll
have to muddle through somehow.
very good, yes. In 2001, Hugh Martin, who had become active with religious ministries, wrote a Christian version of the song called Have Yourself a Blessed Little Christmas. And so that's the story of the lyrics behind Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. In addition to Judy Garland and Frank Sinatra, Tori Amos included an acoustic version of the song. The rock group Chicago included it on their 19th studio album.
First Christmas album, yeah.
In 2011, Michael Bublé released a version of it.
Rang the phones at public television every time we played it.
In 2016, Josh Groban actually hit number one.
Never
on the contemporary
that.
Charts, wow. With yet another version of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. 2 years later, John Legend did the same thing. So it's a song that just keeps coming back.
Carpenter's version, always a favorite, and they say of all the Christmas specials we miss, it's Karen and Richard Carpenter with a Christmas special. And for the record, I just got to share, Karen Carpenter is quite the drummer.
Her percussion ability.
1976, they had a special. Richard said, I want Karen to play drums. They brought out seven different versions of drum sets, timpani, bongos. 1975, among the five most respected magazines in this country, John and Phil, was Playboy magazine. They did a survey, best drummer of rock and roll of all time for that year. Karen Carpenter was number one. Number two?
I don't know, Buddy Rich.
Led Zeppelin.
Oh,
John Bonham. Yeah.
And he smiled when he heard the statistic.
Playboy magazine was what?
One of the top five respectable magazines there in the mid-70s for surveys and studies and things like this. The reading part
yes.
of it.
No,
I read it
she's
from the
Yeah, she's obviously got musical chops.
Obviously,
we read
it.
Articles, John.
For the articles. because it was so respectable. Very good.
Karen Carpenter, solo. Go to YouTube. It's about 20 minutes long. Unbelievable.
Okay. As I said a moment ago, and once again, congratulations to Matt in Shelton. What an interesting change we could be seeing. The Washington Interscholastic Activities Association. This is the body that sets standards for sports competition in high schools and middle schools. They are considering a pair of proposed amendments that would keep boys who identify as transgender girls from competing in the same division as girls. This follows a controversy from last May when a boy who identifies as a girl was the state girls champion in the 400-meter race. Again, the winner was a boy who said he identifies as a girl. When it came time to award medals at the podium, all the athletes cheered for one another, but when the winner's name was called out for that particular race, the stadium went almost silent. There were scattered boos. The other athletes, for the most part, just put their hands behind their backs. So this was basically a time when people started pushing back that trans ideology had resulted in boys depriving girls of their rightful place as winners. And so here we are 6 months later, and you now have the State Activity Interscholastic Activities Association looking at a couple of amendments that would limit girls' sports competition to students that were female at birth. One amendment proposes the creation of a girls' division. So there would be girls' sports, and then there would be open sports where you could compete with the boys. Any student could participate in the open division. The second amendment would propose a girls' division, a boys' division, and an open division. So there would be three leagues, girls, boys, open. The First Amendment would be girls and boys, girls and open, meaning if you're trans, whether you're a girl transitioning to be a boy or a boy transitioning to be a girl, and whether you're transitioning or not, whether you simply say you are, you would be competing against boys. Here's what the proposal stipulates. The WIAA encourages participation for all students, regardless of their gender identity or expression. Most state, local, and federal rules and regulations require schools to provide transgender athletes with equal opportunities to participate in athletics, but to maintain fair and equitable competition, participation in girls' sports and girls' divisions of sports is restricted to students assigned female who were assigned female at birth. The purpose of this policy is to offer clarity with respect to the participation of trans and gender diverse student athletes. This policy encourages a culture in which student athletes can compete in a safe and supported environment. Well, I'm glad it's happening. It should have happened a few years ago. And Chris Reykdal, our state school superintendent, did nothing to make that happen. In fact, he actually was supporting boys participating in girls' sports. But the league authority for it is, again, now on record calling for either girls' sports in an open division, that would be the boys' division and trans athletes could participate, or girls and boys with a third division. Good for them. It's about time. And it's 49 minutes after 7 o'clock. While we're talking about trans issues, a alleged assault taking place on a member of Congress over trans politics. We'll have that for you coming up on The Commute with Carlson.
Good night.
Three dog night. All right. Congresswoman Nancy Mace, South Carolina, said she was physically accosted and injured by somebody who confronted her because of her stand on transgender men using, or transgender women, meaning men who are biological men who identify as women, using the women's restrooms. She said, I was physically accosted tonight on the Capitol grounds over my fights to protect women. Capitol Police have arrested him. All the violence and threats keeps proving our point. Women deserve to be safe. Your threats will not stop my fight for women. That fight in D.C. is her efforts to keep trans women, meaning men who say they are women, identify that way, out of the women's restrooms. 33-year-old James McIntyre of Illinois has been arrested, faces a charge of assaulting a government official. Supporters of the man deny that he did so. We'll see how this, what happens next. She says she required, Nancy May says that she needs a brace for her wrist and needed ice for her arms. She said her arm, she said it'll heal just fine. So more on this story as it develops. You're listening to the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Good morning. Hour number three, right after your 8 o'clock headlines. Hour number three of the John Carlson Show underway. Of course, your phone calls, your text messages welcome at the same number for both. It's 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. All right. Well, we have been talking this morning during the first hour about the manifesto left behind. Actually, what wasn't left behind, he was caught when he was arrested among his belongings. Of Luigi Mangione, this is the man police say is responsible for the murder of healthcare executive George Thompson. Shot in the back as he was entering the New York Hilton Hotel to deliver a speech. Mangione probably didn't do himself or his attorney very many favors by saying in the manifesto, quote, to save you a lengthy investigation, I state plainly that I wasn't working with anyone. This was fairly trivial, some elementary social engineering, basic CAD, a lot of patience. He says, I do apologize for any strife of traumas, but it had to be done. Frankly, these parasites simply had it coming. His lawyer says, his name is Tom Dickey, says that he should be allowed to be bailed out and that he should not be facing extradition. Here's part of his interview with CNN's Caitlin Collins.
I haven't seen a speck of evidence at all. I argued today at the extradition hearing. I still haven't received details about the charges that he's facing in New York. I heard your introduction and looking into that. But so I, you know, we as lawyers need to make informed decisions, and we need to get our hands and our eyes on some evidence.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the charges right here. It's murder, a loaded firearm, two counts of that, a forged instrument, and criminal possession of a weapon as well. I mean, those are the charges from New York. I mean, so you're not, as you're fighting extradition, you're not actually arguing that the authorities in New York have the wrong guy, are you?
Well, I have seen any evidence that they have the right guy. I can tell you that much. So I don't know anything about that. You know, there's, you know, identification issues, that are present. And so I don't, you know, like I said, this is why I need to look at some things and they need to convince me. You know, I try to remind people, and it's a shame that we forget about this presumption of innocence that the Constitution gives all Americans. And people don't worry about the Constitution until they're, facing charges or accusations against them. Then trust
yeah, well,
me, Caitlin, the Constitution matters. But,
and of course it does. And
yes,
I know you highlighted earlier and emphasized innocent until proven guilty. I understand that. But I read the police report from when he was arrested. He initially gave them a false name. And then when they asked to confirm his identity, he said that he shouldn't have lied to them.
Okay. So that gives you an idea where his lawyer says he hasn't seen evidence, and then he complains about, you know, I haven't looked into details here. Well, the details is where the evidence is. Number one, he spot on looks exactly like the photos that police circulated of the man they say was responsible. Number two, he appears to have been carrying the murder weapon with him several days after the attack. Number three, you've got his DNA at the crime scene, and you also have his DNA at a nearby Starbucks. Number four, you have the manifesto that I just was quoting from where he said, to save you a lengthy investigation, I state plainly that I wasn't working with anyone. And, you know, there's other evidence as well. But what is truly alarming to a lot of people, including me, is the reaction, the public reaction to Luigi Mangione's arrest. The McDonald's, where he was arrested, got deluged with complaints from people, including terrible reviews on Yelp.
Yeah, something we hit on yesterday's show. Google had to delete some of them.
People who are angry that they help police catch this guy. You have members of the news media, including Taylor Lorenz, who had worked for the New York Times and the Washington Post, saying she was quite pleased. She was smiling. She was almost giddy when she was doing media interviews. She is no longer with either one of those publications. There are several university professors, including Ivy League professors, who appear to be taking kind of an obtuse view of the value of Mr. Thompson's life, married, father of two, but all about how, you know, people have had it with health insurance companies and now they're striking out. Michael in Graham, KVI listener Michael in Graham said, John, I've been researching reaction to the CEO assassination on YouTube and other places. What I'm reading frightens me. There seems to be a sizable portion of the public that thinks that this guy, meaning Luigi Mangione, was a hero, that the CEO deserved to die. Now, bear in mind, Mr. Thompson was not accused of wrongdoing. You know, he's not under indictment. He wasn't accused of doing anything illegal or unethical. All he was known for was leading, being the head of America's most popular healthcare company with people who are purchasing Medicare Advantage plans. Now, that's not to say that nothing insurance companies do is heartless or unethical or illegal from time to time. We all know that happens. But he wasn't accused of doing anything. So, in other words, he was only killed because of the job that he held. Michael and Graham goes on to say, we have within our midst an alarming number of people that do not believe that we are responsible for our own actions. If, as reported, Luigi Mangione had severe back pain from a failed surgery, well, he could have, again, that's something to take up with the people who did the surgery. Why are you blaming a healthcare executive who runs the insurance side of United Healthcare's work? He said, I had a serious back problem when I was his age, and I chose not to have the surgery. Today, I have no problems. I'm seeing an ugly uprising of people who believe it is government who must take care of their every need, and if they don't get it, it's okay to blame someone else for their own problems and inflict harm on those they think are responsible. Let me give you a comparison about, you know, how deeply emotionally and mentally ill I think the political left has become. And it doesn't matter whether they are professors at universities or whether they are prominent people in the media or prominent people in politics. Let's look at an incident that happened on the other side of the political spectrum. In 2009, George Tiller, he's a physician, was a physician, working in Wichita, Kansas. He was one of the few doctors in America who performed late-term abortions. And on May 31st of that year, while serving as an usher at his local church on Sunday, a man named Scott Roeder, who was an anti-abortion fanatic, killed him. Walked up to him in church and shot and killed him. Shot him in the head. He publicly confessed, and he said that he shot Tiller because, quote, preborn children's lives were in imminent danger, close quote. In other words, what this guy's doing might be legal, but it's atrocious. Innocents are dying. Therefore, I have the right to kill him. And he did. Now, there was immediate condemnation from President Obama and the Attorney General at the time, Eric Holder. What's interesting is groups that oppose abortion also weighed in. The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. Quote, killing is the opposite of everything we stand for and everything we want our culture to stand for. We pray for Dr. Tiller and his family. Tony Perkins, Family Research Council. We are stunned at today's news. We strongly condemn the actions taken today by this vigilante killer, and we pray for the Tiller family and for the nation that we might become once again a nation that values all human life. The American Jewish Congress. Tiller's murder exemplifies criminal anarchy, not legitimate protest. His murder was not just a terrible crime against an individual, it was a crime against our democracy. Murder is not a debating technique. Operation Rescue. They're the organization that pioneered civil disobedience, peaceful civil disobedience at abortion clinics. Quote, we are shocked at this morning's disturbing news that Mr. Tiller was gunned down. We have worked for years through peaceful legal means and through proper channels to see him brought to justice. We denounce vigilantism and the cowardly act that took place this morning. We pray for Mr. Tiller's family. Several Right to Life organizations did the same thing. Now, there were a few people who rationalized his killing. But for the most part, overwhelmingly, people who were pro-life, including, I believe, every pro-life member of Congress and every pro-life state legislator who issued a statement on the killing, condemned it. Conservative media condemned it. And so note the different note the different reaction from someone who actually performed late-term abortions, was one of the few doctors in the country who would do them. And look at the celebration, the open celebration of someone who shot and killed a healthcare executive simply because he was the CEO. Again, he wasn't shot because he himself was accused of doing something particularly odious. Just the fact that he was the CEO was reason enough. He's not really human. He's just a symbol of something you hate. So eliminate him. That's where we are. And the reaction really is deeply concerning. And it goes to show once again that the far left will not hesitate to demonize and dehumanize a people who stand in the way of their ideology. In this case, the ideology being that we allow private health care in this country rather than have the government control everything. It is coming up here on 19 and a half minutes after 8 o'clock. You know what that means. Philip J. Vandervoort III, right around the corner, his favorite segment of the day, social media from socialists, as the Commute with Carlson continues. Good morning. 24 minutes, almost 25 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning on the Wednesday edition of the John Carlson Show, 2 weeks out from Christmas.
And Joan Jett is singing Christmas tunes. I didn't know she did a Christmas
song.
When
I think about Christmas, comes immediately to mind. Okay. Not.
Right,
all
exactly.
Right. What's going on, social media from socialists there, Phil?
Going to start with some news, and then we'll get to the socialists here in a half sec. CNN posting a story here within the last hour that says police investigators in New York are saying that Luigi Mangione's fingerprints match those prints that were taken at the scene in New York City of the assassination of the United Healthcare CEO. So that is the developing news based on the arrest, apprehension, and forthcoming extradition to New York City for Luigi Mangione. Now, for the socialists on social media, sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort, Bernie Sanders is saying that this will likely be his last term. That's according to the Hill.com political news website. I'm like,
well,
likely?
Well, he just got reelected, right?
And he has 12 more years in him?
He's 83. Well, of course, it's his last term. You know, his last term should have been a couple of terms ago.
To be really candid here, did Bernie Sanders make this announcement or pronouncement before or after Mitch McConnell tipped over while he had a fall in the Senate building or somewhere on the Capitol grounds yesterday? Mitch McConnell, the Kentucky senator, and after the California Senator Dianne Feinstein aging problems that we all witnessed, and McConnell health problems that we've all witnessed.
Dianne Feinstein was 124 years old.
Yeah.
She was way up there.
So 6 years, I guess.
Yeah.
Now, for Vermont, I wanted to ask you this, John.
Okay.
Bernie Sanders finally sums it up with his Senate career, and somebody else has to run for that open seat. We'll just kind of, for the sake of this conversation, call it an open seat that would get whenever we get to the next election in Vermont. Does Vermont elect somebody reasonable, or do they elect somebody who's every bit as ideological as Bernie, whether or not he's independent, she's independent, or Democrat, or whatever?
Every once in a while, they will elect a Republican. They will do what Washington State and Oregon and California no longer do.
Used to do at
the statewide level. That those three West Coast states simply don't elect Republicans, as we have seen with clarity.
Mm-hmm.
But in Vermont, every so often they'll do that.
Maybe they'll surprise us. Okay. Now, President Biden, according to Bloomberg News reports, President Biden will end up blocking a U.S. steel merger with Nippon Steel. And I'm looking at one post that says
Japanese company.
Yeah, so a Japanese steel maker would buy out U.S. steel. And I'm looking at contributing writer for Fast Company and The Atlantic, editor at the Yale Review, wrote for the financial page at The New Yorker, a guy named James Surowiecki says, "This is nonsense. There's no justification, economic or national security, for stopping this acquisition. It's being blocked because the union doesn't like it. And, quote, we don't want U.S. Steel to be owned by a foreign company." And James Surowiecki concludes, says that this is bad for the company, bad for workers, and bad for the U.S. And that's what Joe Biden's going to do by blocking this steel merger.
I'm hearing arguments on both sides on that one. And again, it became a political football.
Mm-hmm.
And both Donald Trump and Kamala Harris said they opposed the merger, the seal, okay. the sale. But we'll see if it eventually happens and will happen if it doesn't go through. That's that other thing, you know, this Kroger merger we're going to talk about after the
Kroger-Albertsons
8:30 break. You know, the merger has been stopped by both a federal judge and a local judge here in Washington. So even if the federal judge had allowed it, the local judge allowed it nationally, a local judge would have gotten in the way here in Washington. And what will now happen because the merger is blocked? That's when you've got to look at, you know, will stores start to close because the behemoth stores, not the large grocery stores, which is, you know, what Kroger, Albertsons, QFC, that's what they are. I'm talking about Walmart and Costco, which are now very much in the food business, Amazon. How are they able to compete in that environment? And that's really what hasn't been explored in much detail. We'll take a look as The Commute with Carlson continues. Talk Radio 570 KVI. Back we are, The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Well, some good news. We've got fewer stolen cars in Puget Sound because now the police can chase car thieves. Now the police can go after them. And Molly Shen from Como 4 brings the welcome news. We talked about this at the city level. Federal Way seeing double-digit reduction in overall crime, including violent crime, but especially in auto theft. Way, way down. And it's not just in Federal Way.
New numbers from the Puget Sound Auto Theft Task Force showed that car thefts continue a steady decline. The task force found that in November, there were more than 250 vehicles stolen in Pierce County and nearly 1,100 reported stolen in King County. That works out to about 44 vehicles every day. So far in 2024, there have been more than 26,000 vehicles stolen statewide. While that number is high, it is actually down 30% from 2023.
Wow, that's a lot of cars.
It's 30% reduction in a year. What changed last year? What changed?
I believe, wasn't there a statewide initiative
that
was approved by the Washington legislature after the Washington legislature and Jay Inslee watered down a previous law?
Brian Haywood, and those of you who signed the ballot measure to put the initiative that strikes down the state restriction on police chases, give yourself a pat on the back. You did more than the Washington State Legislature to reduce car theft. You did more than Jay Inslee to reduce car theft. You did way more than Bob Ferguson, the state's top law enforcement official, to reduce car theft. That initiative, which the Democrats had to vote for, because the alternative was putting it on the ballot, and they didn't want it on the ballot when they were had all their members running for re-election. That ballot measure is the difference. But as you just heard, there are still thousands of cars every year, tens of thousands of cars in the Puget Sound area being stolen every year. Here's the latest. And once again, here we go. It's juveniles. This is from Fall City. If you go along the main drag, there's a gun store there. So it's not off in some far corner. It's right there along the equivalent of Main Street. And a bunch of juveniles in a stolen car tried to break in and pilfer all the firearms from the store.
The popular gun store targeted by burglars, two of them barely old enough to be in middle school.
The youngest suspects are 12 years old, and tonight a man is charged with leading them to that store and helping them in their alleged plot.
This is a 20-year-old who's guiding four juveniles, one 17 and the other two, again, just 12. I'd love to know the criminal backgrounds of all of them. And whether any of them were ever hit with consequences for committing criminal actions. My guess is probably not. Here's Como's Ryan Sims in Fall City.
We're talking about a pair of 12-year-olds plus a 16-year-old and a 17-year-old with the alleged ringleader of this group, I should say, a 20-year-old male now locked up here at the jail. For a place that bears all the precautions of preventing crime, the biggest blow for employees here at Fall City Firearms were the suspects' young ages.
They're not here to steal guns for duck hunting. They're not going to be using these things for good.
According to charging documents, all five suspects used stolen Kias to get here. And prosecutors believe each suspect were on these barriers, trying to break in, when they were caught by a sheriff's deputy who was simply passing by.
Just passing by. This is what you call proactive policing. Officer coming by, something doesn't look quite right, and he immediately takes action. So what happened when he did take action?
From there, the chase was on. Court papers described the suspects as being bunched together in a stolen Kia with speeds eventually reaching 100 miles per hour in a 55 zone. Deputies say the bunch eventually wiped out. The lone adult gave up on the scene, but canine teams at Guardian 1 were needed to track the juvenile suspects. They are now each facing prosecution.
Good. Hit them with maximum charges, because once again, if you say you oppose gun violence and you don't crack down on people who steal guns or engage in straw purchasing, which is how most criminals get their guns, then you're not really against gun violence. You're just using gun violence to attack the rights of law-abiding gun owners. Okay? When you don't want to crack down on people who steal firearms, when you don't want to crack down on violent felons who possess firearms illegally after they serve their sentences, when you don't want to crack down on people engaged in straw purchasing, but you do want to ban AR-15s and you do want to ban gun magazines that hold more than 10 rounds in the clip, then you're not really against gun violence. You're just using the issue as a predicate to go after the rights of law-abiding people. And I'm tired of these hypocrites in Olympia, because we do have a problem with gun violence, and it's all completely preventable. All you need to do is start hammering people who are in the illegal gun business. And Olympia has deliberately chosen not to do it. Again, it's not that, oh, we're going to get to it, it's on our list. No, it's not on their list. They don't want to do it. Now, you're probably thinking, well, why wouldn't they want to do it? The reason they don't want to do it is that a disproportionate number of offenders are people of color, are racial minorities. And, well, that's disproportionate, so that will simply lead to a bigger problem, a bigger problem of racial disproportion behind bars. The real outrage, of course, when it comes to racial disproportion is that people of color, racial minorities, are far more likely to be victims of crime, particularly violent crime. So do you want to stand with the racial minorities who are the criminals or the racial minorities who are the victims? Why don't we stay with the victims? Why don't we help them? And why don't we make life considerably less pleasant and less comfortable for people, juveniles and adults alike, who are engaging in crime? We didn't have 12-year-olds engaged in armed carjacking and attempted gun store robberies 10 years ago. This is all on the shoulders of King County's woke prosecutor, now out of office, Dan Satterberg, his woke predecessor, Lisa Manion, and the uber woke man named Jimmy Hung in the prosecutor's office, who came up with this great idea of diversion and alternative sentencing for juveniles. The problem is that once you get a break and then you commit a crime again, that's the time to stop giving out breaks. But no, not with these three. The breaks just keep coming and the crime keeps accelerating and graduating from one level to the other. From joyriding to stealing cars to use them to smash in storefronts and rob merchandise. To armed carjacking, to murder, to shootings. That is the problem we have. And again, you can all blame all of this. This is Dow Constantine's King County government. And Dow Constantine's reaction to this massive increase in crime is to call for the closure of the juvenile justice jail. How about we, and of course, what has happened, if you're a liberal, you should oppose what the King County Prosecutor's Office and Dow Constantine have been doing, because the net result of this is you've actually now got more juveniles who are locked up. Twice as many as you did a few years ago, because now they're committing crimes that you can't send them home. They're armed carjacking. You can't just send someone to their room with an ankle bracelet. So by any definition, by any measurement of success or failure, the juvenile incarceration alternative program has been an abysmal, catastrophic failure. It's why we need a new prosecutor, and it's why we need to completely overhaul how we deal with crime by repeat offenders, juvenile and adult, here in Washington State. It is coming up on 8:48, The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Movie. What's it from?
You cannot be fooled. You instantly know the source.
Here's a hint. Kevin! Home Alone. All right. Back we are, The Commute with Carlson. All right. A federal judge has scrapped the merger between Albertsons, two grocery giants, Albertsons and Kroger, which have a bunch of other stores under their umbrella, including QFCs. A local judge ruled that it runs afoul of Washington law as well. This comes after merger has now been scrapped after the $24.5 billion merger was challenged successfully in court. Here is Tim Hall, Northwest News Radio.
The deal, which would have been the largest grocery store merger in U.S. history, is likely dead. Rob Smith, editor of Seattle Business Magazine, thinks Kroger execs were resigned to this outcome and are ready to move on.
I think Kroger turns back and looks inward, tries to shore up its operations, you know, operationally tries to improve some of its supply chains and, you know, tries to keep prices low. But I think Kroger's going to continue to do it alone.
The merger would have affected dozens of Safeway, Fred Meyer, and QFC stores across Washington. It faced significant opposition from unions and customers concerned about increased prices and market consolidation. Judge Adrienne Nelson agreed, ruling the merger would eliminate crucial competition. Tim Hall, Northwest News Radio.
Okay, what I am now concerned about is, will we see fewer grocery stores, even fewer than if we had allowed the merger? Because the merger would have resulted in some consolidation and some store closures. But will we now have even less competition? Because while people are talking, you know, pointing fingers between Kroger and Albertsons, and saying, oh, there'll be less competition. The real competition is between the grocery store model, if you will. The grocery stores, the supermarkets, as they've been called for quite some time, versus what are now the food behemoths. Costco. Walmart. Amazon. That is what they are facing, Kroger and Albertsons, QFC stores and the like. That is what they're trying to survive against. And it'll be interesting to see if they are able to prevail. It's very chilly, just as it was chilly for little corner grocers before the advent of the supermarket, or after the advent of the supermarket. That's all the time we have for now. We'll talk about this in greater detail on a future show. The Commute with Carlson out for now. Let's talk again in 21 hours.